Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here, episode 2438, joined by our old friend Jason Rink, who, when I asked him how he wanted to be introduced, wasn't particularly insistent on any particular thing being said. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to riff on old Jason Rink, whom I've known for an indeterminate period of time, but at least 15 or so years or more, going back to the Ron Paul days. Jason made a documentary about nullification, state nullification, which is an interesting topic for me. I wrote a book on it. He made a film about it, featured me in it. Very nice. You can't see it in the background here, but in my home office, I have the promotional poster hanging on the wall for that
yes.
film. So I knew about quite a bit of your work. You then did some great promotional work for the Contra Cruise when Bob Murphy and I used to host a cruise based on our Contra Krugman podcast in the old days. You did promotional videos that made people who hated cruises wanted to go on this thing because the videos are so good. Well, this most recent project of yours has taken you into, oddly enough, the most controversy you've faced, because I think we can measure that in terms of the blowback you've faced on one platform after another. So I'm glad to have you back. We're talking, of course, the early part of January 2024, just after January 6th. But that's very appropriate given the subject matter. And I know that you've been working on this like until the wee hours of the morning to get these installments out. But we're talking about your series Q Sent Me. I've just watched the second, how would you want to describe that? Episode, installment?
Yeah, it's a two-part because, you know, when we started this story 3 years ago following Jacob Chansley, the Q shaman after Jan 6, really didn't know what was going to happen to old Jake. And so I didn't realize I was going to be making a movie for 3 years is what happened. So I started making the film and we put out the first installment a year ago in November, thinking we were going to get another installment out just a couple months later. Well, lots of stuff happened. Jake ended up getting out of jail. The Tucker Carlson footage got released. You know, his story just got richer. And we said, look, we just want to try to tell the complete story as much as we can. So it took us until just a few days ago to come out with that second part. Yeah. And you can find that at mymoviesplus.com, a great platform that is not afraid to feature these kind of films. But yeah, it was an uphill battle, man. When we made Nullification together, I thought that was going to be the most controversial topic I would ever do. You know, I mean, people at that time thought nullification was such a bad word. And now here I am. I'm back on Twitter now. Last time I talked to your audience, I think I had been canceled again or whatnot, but I seem to be back and we're talking about the film and talking about Jake's story and trying to get the word out on it.
Goes to show they should have just been satisfied when we were talking about nullification. Now they're begging us to talk about nullification again. So yeah. Because January 6th is so toxic for people. I mean, so you were thrown off everything. Twitter or X.
Yes.
Has you back on, which is good. I checked immediately before because I wrote my email newsletter about you today. So I checked before I said anything rash. So I noted that you had been on a 555-day ban from that platform because of posting something on this. And the thing is, it's not even like, it may be a bit of a sympathetic portrayal in the sense that you're not trying to destroy the guy's reputation, but you're really just letting him talk. You're not correcting him or saying, well, this shaman stuff seems a little bit woo-woo to me. Like, that's not the point of this film. It's just to, wouldn't you be curious about this guy? I mean, you know, I mean, if the media wants to talk about this episode of American history 24 hours a day, wouldn't we want to know something about the guy who kind of symbolizes it? It's odd. It's not odd, but it is odd.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we wanted to tell a very like cinema verite, not highly editorialized presentation of this guy, Jacob Chansley, who honestly, he made a series of poor decisions is really when you think about it. He wasn't a dangerous guy, but he decided to go into the Capitol carrying a spear, writing a note to Mike Pence that justice is coming, okay, compounding sort of his troubles. And then he calls the FBI, voluntarily with no lawyer on his way home on January 8th, I think, and finds himself in custody 24 hours later.
Oh, wait, before we get to that, you know, before we get to that, the thing is, like, you see him talking about, yeah, I'm going to be talking to the FBI. And he has this, he even then has this naive confidence in the institutions of America that he'll be exonerated because he didn't do anything.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's that back the blue nature, I think, that you find in a lot of conservative circles, right? Which is that law enforcement does exist to help us out and do the right thing. I will say a lot of them don't have that opinion anymore in the aftermath of January 6th. I think it's been a bit of a red pill for them about that the government and the enforcement arms of the government aren't necessarily there to do the right thing, aren't necessarily there to protect them. And so I think it's a good thing that that shift is happening. But unfortunately, it's costing a lot of people their freedoms. A lot of people are being overcharged in January 6th cases. They're still arresting people to this day. And they've even said that they're going to now start prosecuting people who just went onto the lawn. They crossed some imaginary line.
Yeah.
You know, they're continuing to expand the concentric circles of who they're going to prosecute at this point.
Do you know about the case of, I want to get back to Chansley in just a minute, of course, but do you know the case of a metal guitarist named John Schaefer?
I don't know that case.
Okay, so he's a January 6th guy. He's awaiting sentencing. As far as I know, he's still awaiting sentencing, but he went in. And so now since the media, the metal music media is all hard left,
yeah,
they have done nothing but ridicule him. You know, he's lost everything. I mean, his band abandoned him. His other musical project, the other guy abandoned him. I got to know him because I had him on the Tom Woods Show. And then I found out that this had happened. And he was in solitary confinement for an extended period of time, 2 months or more. He said that the food was unfit for human consumption. It was unbelievable. So, but I didn't know about this. I found out, somebody told me, and said, what can we do for this guy? So I immediately thought, Mark Victor in Arizona, Attorneys for Freedom. He was that guy who ran for Senate as a Libertarian, then dropped out and endorsed Blake Masters.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've known him for a long time. So he got him out. He got him out.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. I have not heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. He became his lawyer. So that's at least something. So I got to know him in the interim a little bit more. He came to my Christmas party 1 year. He just wanted to blend in. He didn't want anybody to know who he was. And as I walked by him at one point during the party, I heard somebody saying to him, you know, these January 6th protesters are being railroaded. And he's just standing there patiently listening. I thought, this poor guy. Right. But one night I took my wife and one of my daughters to dinner with him and his daughter. And my daughter in the car, we had told her what had happened to him. And basically his story is, he says, I'm no Trump lackey. That's not why I was there. He said, but I heard that the police were beating up an old man. That's why I went in. And I shouldn't have gone in. I should have known it would just be trouble. I shouldn't have gone in. Well, anyway, so we told our daughter what was going on. And so by the time she got to the dinner, she was ready she was totally on his side and what an injustice it was. So we sat down and she's immediately launching into this tirade about the injustice he's suffering. And he quietly but firmly said to her, I went in and I should not have. So it's like I actually wrote a character reference for him for clemency. And I cited that incident that he's not going around on a high horse about the justice of what he did. He says, I shouldn't have done it. And he's just a harmless guy. He's a harmless guy. He's a metal guitarist with a daughter.
Yep.
You know, and just to see this all going on in America. Like my other daughters, I told them, this guy's in solitary confinement. They just thought, I didn't think they did solitary confinement unless you were like an extremely dangerous, violent person.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think people having the opportunity to humanize a J6 defendant by meeting them and getting to know them and then saying, okay, something's off here, right? Some are dangerous people. Some committed violent acts. That goes without saying. And listen, if you're going to tangle with cops in a fight or a brawl, you need to understand you're going to probably end up on the wrong side of that at any time, right? But this idea that you walk into the Capitol building or you go onto the Capitol grounds or you find yourself sort of in an unexpected situation and you don't damage property, you don't hurt anybody, all of that, these cases should be handled so differently than each other. And yet most people are just being blanketed under this one thing, which is like, oh, you were a rioter. Oh, you were present there? You were a rioter. Doesn't matter if you did anything else in the past. Doesn't matter if you have a clean record. January 6th as an event was classified as a domestic terrorist event. And so therefore, if you were involved in that event in any capacity, unless you can get some good representation, which many of these people don't have access to, you're likely going to go for quite a ride. And so he's just another case, this friend of yours you're talking about, he's just another case of wrong place, wrong time, make a bad decision, find your life turned upside down. And so, yeah, it's crazy. And I would say one other thing that occurred to me as I've looked through all this footage and I've dug into this issue, I would see all these people inside the Capitol who are chanting to cops saying, this is the people's house. We paid for this. This is our house. And I think there's kind of a boomer myth that people need to get rid of, which is that that is the case. You're inside the people's house for just a few minutes and you're going to find yourself maced with pepper spray and hit with a baton and escorted out roughly. The Capitol belongs to a den of thieves and vipers. And the people don't have the right to go in there anytime they want, no matter what our little history books that we read in school tell us, right?
Yeah. The White House, remember, is the people's house, they sometimes say.
Yeah, exactly.
Not you people.
Exactly.
Okay, so the whole thing is over in the sense that he's free now. And I would like to talk about that. But now that he's free, and now that, you know, anything you say can't possibly get him into further trouble, what's your impression of him? I mean, do you find him likable? You find him sincere? I mean, what's your unvarnished impression of him?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that stuck out the most for me was we interviewed Jake on at 10 a.m. January 7th, you know, the day after the event. And so I don't think anybody's got as unvarnished a story from him as we did, because he was in jail 48 hours later and he didn't think he was going to be in any trouble when he talked to us. He was like, I didn't do anything wrong. And so when he recounted the story to us, it was so unbelievable. He talked about how he prayed. He talked about how he walked through an open door. He talked about how he was escorted around. He talked about how he prevented another demonstrator from stealing some muffins from the break room. Right? He was like, don't, those aren't your muffins. And we're hearing him tell this story. And in the moment, I'm like, there's no way this is true. Right? Like, really? Well, then the footage starts coming out. And, you know, in our film, we have a clip of him telling the guy not to steal the muffins. You know, it's like, we have him praying. We have him being escorted around. We have him telling people not to throw things at the cops. We have him telling people, Donald Trump told us all to go home and I'm going to be the example. He went and took his bullhorn to try to tell everybody to leave, you know? And so his story's always been accurate. It's always been supported. And then when we got to talking to his family and his friends, and I had multiple conversations with him from jail, he's a very sincere, harmless person with some unconventional ideas, some of his beliefs about maybe his past lives or his, you know, the way that he dresses or whatever might seem odd, but you know, it's just a harmless set of beliefs that he has spiritually about his own life. And then he talks about things like ending the Federal Reserve. You know, he talks about things like how the government's taken over by corporate lobbying interests and they really run the whole thing. And it's like, he has a lot of garden variety beliefs that a lot of anti-establishment people who see that there's a deep state that's kind of running the show behind the scenes believes, you know? So most of the time I would find myself nodding in agreement with what Jake had to say and always believed that he was a harmless person, that he didn't go there to hurt anybody, that he actually did what he could to prevent people from being injured. He's thanking the police as they escort them out of the Senate, saying, thanks for your patience. We really appreciate it. God bless you guys. So the fact that that stuff didn't come into play to minimize his sentence, really, You know, he still got sentenced to 41 months. He did, I think, about 30 months when all was said and done, and about 9 in solitary confinement.
9 months in solitary confinement?
Yeah, pre-trial. So they used COVID as a reason to separate people into solitary confinement.
Of course they did.
Yeah, exactly. And he was one of the first people that pled guilty. He pled guilty to interrupting an official proceeding, which is a felony. He got the longest sentence at the time of 41 months that had ever been handed out. Well, what we saw in the aftermath was that people who went to trial, they got many, many, many more months and years than Jake did. And so Jake's decision to plead probably turned out to be the best decision he made in the whole ordeal. He does accept responsibility for making a poor choice. Any laws that he broke, he was willing to pay the price. And he made a statement when he gets out, the day he gets released, and he says, "I forgive my captors. I harbor no ill will toward the federal government," which I don't agree with. I think you should harbor ill will towards the government. You could forgive the individual captors. That's fine. But I think all in all, anybody who meets the guy, you can hear him on Spaces now a lot. He's got 100,000 Twitter followers. He's very intelligent, very articulate, very well read, respects people, doesn't like to interrupt people. You know, I mean, he's just a really great guy. And I think I would call Jake a friend of mine at this point. I mean, I've talked to him at some of his lowest points and was really happy to see him when he got out, spent some time with him when he got out. So yeah, and I think that's true for probably a lot of January 6th defendants. Is there's probably a lot of really great people who are not harmful, who have done a lot of time or are doing a lot of time or are facing a lot of time.
Hey, everybody, are you sure Wall Street and the establishment are giving you the best money advice? They're telling you to put your money in an IRA or 401k. But studies show the average American who follows that advice is going to outlive his savings by 10 years. Bank on yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in over 160 years. So with Bank on Yourself, your plan doesn't go backward when the markets tumble. Your principal and growth are locked in. You'll know what your tax rate will be in retirement. Zero under current tax law, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. And you're in control. You get access to your money for any purpose with no questions asked and without government penalties or restrictions on how much income you can take or when you can take it. Try doing that with a 401k or IRA. Do you want guaranteed predictable annual growth, control of your money, and tax-free retirement income? Then go to bankonyourself.com/woods and we'll send you a free report with the proven retirement plan alternative that banks and Wall Street are desperately hoping you never hear about. Just go to bankonyourself.com/woods for your free report. bankonyourself.com/woods. Did you get a sense in your conversations with him about maybe disillusionment he might have had all of a sudden having been so deferential toward law enforcement and the three-letter agencies like the FBI? Did you get a sense that he felt like a, what do you call when your neck just, I can't, whiplash?
Whiplash,
you know,
yeah.
Like all of a sudden I'm in a country I don't recognize.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if you asked him now, he would probably have made different decisions about interacting with law enforcement without a good attorney, because that didn't end up benefiting him at all. They used his words against him from the jump. It's funny, we have a unreleased recording of him when he was talking to the FBI, and he was just trying to red pill the FBI guy. He was like, "Now listen, I know you're probably just a good guy trying to do your job, but the FBI, man, that's a corrupt organization. And you know, the guy who runs that thing," and, you know, he starts trying to break down the deep state and all of this to this FBI guy on the phone. You know, he's just always an evangelist for what he believes. And so I think he would do things differently again if he could. I do think he probably had some disillusionment with Trump. We asked him if he wanted to be pardoned by Trump. His lawyer tried to get him pardoned. Obviously, Trump didn't pardon him. Trump pardoned 50 Cent. and a bunch of other random people and didn't pardon the Jan 6 people. And so I do think that was disappointing to Jake, even though Jake said it wasn't Trump's fault I went in there. But I believe Jake still supports Donald Trump ultimately, but he is running as a libertarian or attempting to run as a libertarian for Congress in Arizona this year. So, you know, I don't know if he would have identified as a libertarian before, but he seems to be identifying more as a libertarian now.
That's interesting. Now, they claimed that he and others had violent intent, that they were actually, and you include in the documentary, maybe some newscasters or headlines saying that it was part of a plot to assassinate certain members of the U.S. government. Now, this, it seems certain, was as far as could be from his own intentions.
Yeah, totally false. And this is a really interesting thing you bring up, Tom. You know, if people could go back in time to those just days after January 6th, there's a lot of people who might believe something different about January 6th than they did in those initial days. You know, even very freedom-loving people, people on the right and libertarians might have been fooled by some of the propaganda from the government and the media even. It was a fog of war situation for the public, right? We didn't know what happened. We didn't know what to believe. Well, there were stories put out by the government through the media that there were capture kill teams that they had identified, and they lumped Jake into that. Those stories then permeated to the judges who made decisions about whether or not to release him on bail. And in his case, that's exactly what happened. You know, he sits before that judge within a week of his arrest, and these stories are out there. These claims are out there. The Department of Justice is making the claim, or at least the FBI field office in Arizona. So he is locked up without bail, and that never changes for him. But roughly 24 hours after he's locked up without bail, Michael Sherwin, who's the head of the FBI, really, this whole January 6th case prosecution, he comes out and he says, oh, that's false. That was wrong information. We're going to correct that. But at that point, it was already too late for people who'd been arrested. And that's why Jake was in solitary, really, for 9 months, because they said he's a flight risk and he's a threat. And once a judge makes that determination, it's very hard to turn that over. Yeah.
But yet he did get released early. What were the circumstances there?
Yeah, this is really interesting. In the film, I have some footage of a phone call I had with Jake just 3 weeks after he was sentenced. So he gets his 41-month sentence. He got credit for, I think, 11 months time served is how it worked out. So he was going to do another 30 months. And in this conversation, just weeks after his sentence, he's already talking about how he might get released up to a year early because of the First Step Act, which allows you to participate in certain programs in jail to get time off and then good behavior. So Jake and his current attorney at that time had already said, you'll probably get out sometime mid-2023. Well, most people in the public didn't know that. And obviously, Jake had to perform a certain way in his incarceration to get that. Well, he did. However, the Tucker Carlson footage just happened to sort of get released 2 months before his final release date. And so it actually was a coincidence. Tucker Carlson's footage didn't have anything to do with his early release, but it did move the needle on public opinion for him.
Yeah.
You know, you had Elon Musk saying, free Jacob Chansley. You had a lot of people on the right who would previously not talk about Jake, who didn't support him. I mean, January 6th was an issue. A lot of people on the right, they still didn't really want to touch it for a while because they didn't really know how they felt about it. And I think Jake's footage really showed people, oh, wow, this is interesting. Like, this may be different than I thought. His story may be different than I thought. And if his story is different, then maybe many other stories are different. So I think that had a big impact on making him somebody who was not vilified after he's come out of prison. He's become quite popular A lot of people have started to listen to him, and they're like, wow, this guy's a lot different than we thought.
I want to ask you about a different person, though, for a minute, just because there's been so much talk about him. Maybe you know who that is, but there's been some chatter about Ray Epps, in particular in recent days, because of all people, Ann Coulter on her Twitter, I don't know if you saw this, was claiming that Ray Epps never urged people to go into the Capitol. He urged them not to go in, that if he did urge them to do anything, he urged them the day before January 6th. He wasn't at the Capitol January 6th. And it was all these things that we have video of. So it was so odd to see this. And everyone's trying to correct her, and she just won't go. So what do you think about this curious Ray Epps character? Do you think that the Tucker Carlsons of the world are reading too much into this?
Well, here's what I'll tell you. Number one.
Well, first of all, explain to people what's the idea behind this Ray Epps fellow?
Yeah, so Ray Epps is this former Oath Keeper, kind of boomer guy, you know, like from Arizona. And he's got a red hat and like Carhartt gear on. And people have seen the famous clip of him whispering in a guy's ear right before the first breach happens. Thomas Massie and Ted Cruz both talked about Ray Epps in Congress and why hasn't he been arrested? Was he a Fed? How many federal agents were out there? And Ray Epps is a guy who was on the most wanted list for a period of time right after January 6th. Then he was just mysteriously removed. And he's one of the only people that is on camera multiple times trying to get people to go to the Capitol, claiming we're going to go into the Capitol. And in fact, it's more than that. So Ray Epps is shrouded in this cloud of mystery because he wasn't arrested for a very long time. He was removed from the most wanted list. The Wall Street Journal did like a glowing puff piece on him. Jamie Raskin talked about poor Ray Epps and how the conservatives are ruining his life. You know, he's getting this treatment no other person who attended January 6th has gotten from the media or from congressmen. Very suspicious is what a lot of people saw. It also turned out that there's some testimony where Ray Epps gave where he texted his nephew claiming he orchestrated it January 6th, that he got people there. Very curious. So we just released another film on January 1st called J6, A True Timeline. You can see it on my Twitter. And we've got a lot more Ray Epps footage in there. Ray Epps showed up at the front lines on the West Plaza where all of the munitions were going off. He was right up there in everything. He wasn't just at the original breach. He was in the middle of everything. He helped take a huge Trump sign and shove it into the police line. We have that footage there. And so who is Ray Epps? The truth is we don't know. We do know that he's gotten a kid glove treatment compared to almost anybody else on January 6th. The Department of Justice finally got around to charging him with a misdemeanor. I don't know that that sentence has happened yet, but they were looking to give him 6 months. Again, just a misdemeanor. I think at the end of the day, he'll likely get some suspended sentence or something like that. I don't think he's going to see a day in jail. And I'm not saying Ray Epps should go to jail. I'm not saying any of these people should necessarily go to jail. The question is why has he gotten such a different treatment than so many other people on January 6th?
Yeah. Yeah, that is the question. There is something very suspicious. Thomas Massie's been very good on this.
Yep.
On the Ray Epps question. I mean, there's something that's very odd. And particularly, again, the way like 60 Minutes and all these weird outlets all want to rush to defend him when he's the one guy we can clearly hear telling people to do the very thing that upset them so much.
Yeah.
You know,
There's footage of him on the night of the 5th saying, we're going to storm the Capitol, which is the verbiage that then is used in the media incessantly in the immediate aftermath of January 6th. And so it's just so bizarre. It also is why it's so critical for the government to release all of the footage. We made the movie J6, A True Timeline. We have a ton of body cam footage in it. We have a lot of security footage in it. We've gotten our hands on probably the biggest cache of J6 footage that anybody has in their hands out there. And we've still only scratched the surface on the footage, but when we saw the footage, we've got officers complaining about being set up, unprepared. Why weren't they given gas masks? They were not told what they were getting into. We see officers, in my opinion, violating the law in their escalation of the use of force and firing munitions on the crowd. There's a lot of information that we haven't seen, but it's through just some of that footage that we saw additional footage of Ray Epps. When did he enter? When did he leave? Who was he with? The American people need all of the footage so that we can try to get a sense as to what really unfolded that day and what the timeline of events were and who was involved and who, if anyone, had the stand down order for there to be less security than maybe there should have been. Those are the unanswered questions. And Ray Epps is just one of those curious pieces of the puzzle. And often what we have to do when we don't have all of the pieces of the puzzle, we got to put together what we can. And so the story of Ray Epps, I think, is more of a symbol of like, this is odd based on what we have. If we had everything, maybe we could know what the full story is.
Yeah, yeah. And now a word from our sponsor.
I'll bet you've read or watched plenty of murder mysteries before. Well, I'm inviting you to participate in one with me. I'm bringing my murder mystery dinner parties around the United States, and I'd like you to join me. Here's how it works. You get assigned a character. You are given background information about your character weeks before you arrive, and throughout the evening, you'll receive printed briefings about things you should say to various other characters and other information that will guide the story along. We'll enjoy a catered dinner in a large luxury hotel room, and shortly after the meal, one character will be dead. It's then up to each one of us to figure out who done it. At woodsmystery.com, you'll see a list of the cities where I'll be, and if you don't see a party in your area, sign up to be notified when we add more of them. I hope to see you there, so together we can find the killer.
Now, maybe you've heard Vivek Ramaswamy talking about this these days, and he is using the, from the media's point of view, very triggering expression, an inside job. He's saying that we now have sufficient evidence to conclude that to some extent, we can say January 6th was an inside job. Now, I suppose it depends on how he's defining the term, but do you think he's overselling that?
Well, I would say, and I don't want to speak out of my depth, okay, I have narrow expertise on this issue, but I would encourage people to look into a former Capitol Police officer named Tariq Johnson, who was formerly a Democrat. He is now a Republican. He's spoken out about some of the things that happened on January 6th, where there are certain decisions that had to have been made from the highest levels. There's a woman named Yogananda DePittman, who was one of the head decision makers in the Capitol Police, the person who was controlling the flow of intel, flowing down to the other officers and the other captains so that everybody could understand what might be happening that day as far as controlling the intel in the lead up to January 6th. And so I don't want to go too deep into this stuff, but some people who have really gone deep into it say, there are people at the top who kept other people in the dark in Capitol law enforcement, which created an opportunity for things to get out of hand that would not normally have gotten out of hand. And it reminds me of the part in the JFK movie where he talks about like who could have got the Secret Service to stand down and who could have caused all of this protocol to be broken, right? You know, it's like, had to be somebody in a position of power. The same thing on January 6th. There were people in positions of power and decision making who made very, very terrible decisions or they wanted to create an opportunity to allow for a large group of protesters to break the law so that they could then receive the full force of prosecution from the government in order to make sure people didn't dissent, didn't protest, didn't complain about elections, wouldn't go rally at any capitals. So I think Vivek is likely aware of some of these arguments in a deeper way than he's talked about them publicly, which is why he's making those claims. And I believe personally that the inside job nature is twofold. It's that there were decisions made in positions of power that wasn't just incompetence, that it was to create an environment where people would fall into sort of a honeypot, and that there were also likely a couple of hundred federal agents that were there undercover, didn't do anything in the lead up to the events of the day. And on that day, we don't know what they engaged in, but we've got a pretty good idea there was a couple hundred federal agents. So I think it was a let it happen on purpose type scenario in order to weaponize aspects of the government against the right-leaning segment of society. And then people made poor decisions that they sort of counted on happening. When you get a lot of angry people together who think that the election's been stolen, that they've had no way to get any recourse on that, you put them all together in the middle of a COVID lockdown and see what happens. I think it was a powder keg waiting to blow.
When you hear somebody use the word insurrection for January 6th, I'm sure you have some kind of visceral response to that. Do you feel like the use or refusal to use the word insurrection to describe these events is maybe in itself an IQ test of sorts, or an ideological litmus test at the very least? And how, if at all, do you think that term applies?
Well, what I can tell you is I was about, I don't know, there's probably 20 people between me and Ray Epps when that first breach happened. I was filming him with my cell phone, and that group, I didn't know who he was on that day, obviously, but there's five police officers standing on the grass and tens of thousands of people coming towards the Capitol. I think 12 highly trained Blackwater soldiers or whatever, Navy SEALs, could have taken and held the Capitol that day. It was so lightly defended. They were so unprepared. And so the great lack of weapons, the great lack of a tactical plan to take over and seize the Capitol leads me to believe insurrection's a bad term. You know, I think in many ways, the Capitol was the car the dog caught and didn't know what to do with it, right? It's like many of these people just found themselves in the Capitol, around the Capitol. Some made poor decisions, but a lot of them were like, wow, this is pretty crazy. Like, what's going on, you know? So I don't think anybody was there to forcefully try to overthrow the government. I do think there are people there who wanted to see the election certification stopped. They didn't want to see the election certification happen. But what's interesting is that some of the people who are the most aggravated by what happened on January 6th were the people who planned the rallies, the people who were leaders in Stop the Steal. Because when the breach of the Capitol property happened, the objections to the electors in Congress and in the Senate, that all got shut down. And there was over 100 representatives who were going to object to the electors, a couple of senators. And once January 6th turned into what it turned into, many of those congressmen lost their courage to say, look, we think there's something wrong with this election. When they reconvened later that evening, it just went through because now the day was a tragedy and people died. So the day was a tragedy in some ways. But it was politically suicide to continue to say, well, yes, today was not ideal, wasn't a good day, but let's still talk about these electors. Let's still talk about the election. That became an issue that couldn't be talked about, and questioning the election and the January 6th insurrection now became joined at the hip as an issue that is pretty toxic politically to talk about.
Well, that leads me to my final question, which is, now I don't know how you outdo yourself in terms of subject matter. So you're going to do a Jeffrey Epstein documentary? Like, what's the next thing?
I didn't kill myself, Tom. I will never commit suicide. I am not depressed. Very happy. I don't know, man. You know, I'm like...
Have you not thought ahead to the next thing?
I want to do a documentary on bourbon, I think. You know, like, I want to do something completely non-political.
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't blame
totally
you.
Totally different. I've spent the last 3 years doing this kind of content. What I will say is that I'm looking to take the truthful storytelling that I've done around this issue. And I still like to tell stories about dissidents. I still like to tell stories that you're not supposed to tell about no-no people. And so I can't tell you what I'm going to do next. I'm taking probably about a 3-month break on my independent projects to sort of regroup. And I can tell you, as soon as I know what I'm working on next, I'll let you know. And I'm currently soliciting great stories and funders who want to help me put these together, because I've spent a lot of money out of my own pocket on the projects that I've done and have had to release them mostly for free or with very little compensation because of being canceled and deplatformed, which is not sustainable, but I also don't mind to have done it. I'm fortunate that I have a business. I'm fortunate that I have the resources to do the things that I want to do. And I feel like these stories are important enough for me to put my own skin in the game, but I'm looking for other people to partner with who are interested in telling more stories, waking more people up, and telling stories in a way that isn't just red meat for the people who already believe, to try to tell it with a high enough production value and broad appeal that we might be able to reach more people. So yeah, that's what I'm up to. I'm on the hunt.
Well, whatever your next project is, I'm already looking forward to it, because I have the luxury of being able to just sit back and enjoy the finished product when, you know, poor soul like you has to slave away with thousands of hours of video to go through in some cases to put together a wonderful finished product. So you can get Q Send Me, of course, at My Movies Plus. So mymoviesplus.com. Movies Plus stood by you through this whole thing. Nobody else would.
Yeah, Corey and the guys over there are awesome. And they've got some great content over there. You know, it's like a $30 a year service. If you use a promo code Shaman, S-H-A-M-A-N, I think you can get a free trial and a discount. And it's a platform that's worth supporting. You know, they're not going to take down Netflix, but you're going to be able to find stuff that you can't find anywhere else there. And they're great guys who are libertarian-minded and liberty-minded who run that. And then if you go to my Twitter, at the Jason Rink, I've got a free film there, J6, A True Timeline, which has gotten a lot of attention over the last few days. Encourage you to go check it out. It's sort of a forensic breakdown of the events of that day, where it's time-stamped, walking people through how it all unfolded, and you're likely to learn a lot of things about that day you've never seen before.
Everything you just said will be in the description of the video or on the show notes page. This is episode 2438, so tomwoods.com/2438. So I'll have your Twitter. All this stuff will be there. So Jason, I appreciate really all this work you do. And my gosh, I mean, it's easy to put on, it's not easy, but and a lot of times when we have things like this happen where you're canceled or some, you know, all this kind of thing that goes on, we put on a brave face and, you know, we appreciate that it gives us street cred. But, you know, the fact is that when all said and done, that's hard. What you endured is difficult. I mean, you couldn't get they canceled your reservation at a hotel in Las Vegas, a major one on the strip. I mean, you know, that's crazy. Like, that is not normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, overcoming obstacles makes us stronger, Tom.
Okay. You are Hercules now, Jason.
Yep. But you know, man, they can't keep good men like us down. You've taken your share of slings and arrows over the years, and you're here at 2,400 plus episodes, man. So it's like, I say the answer usually is just persevere.
Yeah.
And on the other side of it, you're stronger, you're better, and you've maintained your integrity, which is the most valuable thing we have.
And you and I, occasionally we manage to get in front of big media, but for the most part, we're just doing our best under challenging circumstances to just reach as many people as possible. So as we conclude today, I'm going to make an appeal first to support Jason. Check out Q Sent Me. Go to the links. Go to My Movies Plus. Do all this. Follow Jason so that at the Jason Rink. So you'll know what his next thing is. You'll know what the next thing we got to rally to is. But then even when it comes to the old Tom Woods show, I don't get on the big shows. A lot of my friends do. I don't. So I don't have as many opportunities to reach enormous audiences. So what I have are the people who listen to me already. And so if you know somebody in your life who you think would benefit from the old Tom Woods show, don't keep it to yourself. Spread it.
That's right.
Let them know about it. Make that a goal. Like every month, bring one more person into the old Tom Woods show. And then, Jason, you and I could conquer the world after that.
That's right. I have faith, buddy.
All right. Listen, thanks so much, Jason. And thanks to you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.